Lucis Trust, a non-profit, non-political, and non-sectarian organization on the roster of the Economic and Social Council of the United Nations, and concerned with the establishment of world cooperation and goodwill, presents Inner Sight with your host, Robert Anderson. He, with Sarah and Dale McKechnie, President and Vice President of Lucis Trust, will discuss philosophical and spiritual topics essential to everyday life. Now here's your host, Robert Anderson.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Inner Sight. Today we're doing a show on the soul. It's the soul, part one. And in a world that is getting increasingly smaller, and in which people of very different cultures and customs are coming into increasing contact with each other, the realization of the one soul is more important than ever if we are to have right human relations. Today we're going to talk about the soul and try to define it, how we can recognize it, how we can cultivate its presence within ourselves, and learn to see it in others. I like this thought from the books of Alice Bailey. Alice Bailey is the founder of the Lucis Trust organization. The soul is the force of evolution itself. And this was in the mind of St. Paul when he spoke of the Christ in you, the hope of glory. What is the soul and how can we define it?
It's not easy to define, and our listeners will have to be patient with us as we come at it from a number of different approaches. One definition that I like is that the soul is the relation between, or the middle principle between, pure spirit, which believers call God, and matter, or the outer world of material forms. The soul is the relation between. Another definition is that the soul was described in the Bible in Genesis as the garden. If you remember the story of Adam and Eve, they were cast out of the garden, meaning that they were cast out by the soul into the material realm and left bereft of divinity for their sins. Another definition is that the soul touches both the inner realm of spirit, from which it receives inspiration, and the outer external world, from which it receives impression. And that's interesting to ponder on.
Yeah, I like to think of the soul in maybe very much the same way, but I like to think of it as that spark of divinity that lies within each human being. There is this divine part of us that we may not always realize, but that is essentially what that soul is. It is the divine essence. And that's what's really meant in that quote that we opened with. The soul is the force of evolution itself. And it is that divine spark, that divine quality that links us with God, that actually is the force that is moving human consciousness and human creativity forward in a very evolutionary way. And that is really what moves all life on Earth forward, is this divine nature.
That's what moves us forward. And is that for personal evolution as well? For example, one person going from one point in consciousness to perhaps a better state of mind and a better point of consciousness, would that be the soul also, Dale?
Yeah, essentially it is. It's the moving force. It's the motivating force. We don't realize that that's what it is, but it is that divine spark that is moving us, really.
It's the persistence and the driving urge to hang in there, you might say. That's the presence of the soul. There are times in all of our lives, I think, when we might want to give up and cash it in, but there is something in us that causes us to get up and plod on, pick ourselves up and move forward. That's the presence of the soul. I think that's what you mean by the evolutionary aspect of it.
Right.
Yeah. And there's also that beautiful definition from Robert Browning, the poet. He referred to it as the imprisoned splendor. Mm-hmm. I love that expression, the imprisoned splendor that's present within each of us. It's imprisoned within the personality, within the outer persona, the what we, many of us, think is the whole and complete self, the physical being, with its personality and its looks and appearance and habits and attributes. That's just the outer shell in which the soul abides, but for a long time is imprisoned.
Yeah, and another way of looking at it, perhaps, is in relation to the divine Trinity. We have the Trinity of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Ghost, or the Holy Spirit, and the soul is the middle principle here, the Son aspect. The Father is the Spirit, and the soul is the middle, the mediating principle between spirit and matter, as you mentioned earlier.
Son, S-O-N, not S-U-N.
Yes, exactly, Son. And so it is this divine mediator that lies within us. It has a location on its own higher plane of mind, let's say, but there is a projection of that soul in consciousness into every human being, and it's anchored in every human being.
And that factor of consciousness is significant in understanding what the soul is as the middle principle, the relation between pure spirit, which is the spark of divinity, and form. Soul produces an awareness of being, both spirit, both divine in origin, and form, living in the outer world. So the evolutionary force of the soul develops and causes the expansion of consciousness within a human being. One begins by having no awareness at all of one's surroundings or of other people. One begins in apparent darkness and gradually awakens to the world around one and one's relationship to the world and to one's family and to one's fellow human beings. And that unfolding consciousness is the path of the soul.
And it is the soul that represents that high state of perfection that we all try to strive for. Whatever we're doing in life, we're trying to move forward and trying to improve our station in life. We're trying to improve our, whether it's our physical body or whether our emotional nature, or trying to move forward in our careers. There is that inner urge that keeps moving us towards some kind of perfection.
It's often manifesting as a kind of dissatisfaction, isn't it?
Yeah.
That sense that things aren't quite right and that oneself isn't quite right, not quite living up to this standard of perfection that you mentioned, that's like a very quiet tape that's playing in the back of our consciousness that knows better and expects more of us. And it's this voice that is very silent for a long time, but that gradually becomes louder, that provides this standard of perfection that we continually strive toward but usually fail to meet.
Yeah, this is essentially what we are. Every human being is this soul, and we tend to identify too much with our physical and emotional nature, perhaps. But really, what we are in our very deepest essence is this soul. We are in this world to do a specific job, a duty, or dharma, or whatever you want to call it. And everybody plays a part in this, but this is essentially what we are, and that's why we're the soul acts as mediator between man and God. And it is doing the work for God. It is like the agent for God in this work of perfection.
That's also why the soul is often defined as the knower. It knows its purpose. It knows its part in God's plan. And all human beings are striving in some way to awaken to this inner knowing and to find their place within the plan. The soul, in its perfect state, knows why it's living here on earth and what it is here to accomplish. And we have to try to unlock that that knowing. I think another definition of the soul that's important to consider is the fact that a lot of people think of it as the aspect of ourselves that's eternal. I would say not really eternal, but immortal, and there is a difference. The word eternal suggests, at least to me, that this part of ourselves is unchanging and will endure forever and ever as it is presently. And I don't think that's a correct definition of the soul. This is where a lot of the confusion comes in with the Buddhist view, which many people say does not include the recognition of the soul, in the sense that we aren't eternal as souls. We are continuing to change and grow and evolve. I would say they are right. When we die, we do not enter into a state of being that endures forever in whatever the state of consciousness is when one dies. Well, that's not true. We continue to grow and expand. But the soul is enduring, and it is persistent. It's immortal. It lives beyond the death of the body.
How can we recognize the soul?
Well, I don't know what Dale might say, but to me, one early glimmer of the soul that many of us awaken to as children is the conscience. The conscience is that voice within us that says, oh, I shouldn't have done that. And that's probably the first sign of the soul. Another expression of the soul is a sense of responsibility. Because often responsibility goes against what one would prefer.
Yeah, that's the first sign. That's the first indication of the soul taking command, let's say, or taking control or influencing over the personal life, the sense of responsibility, which is, you know, responsibility for oneself and responsibility for family, and it works out from there. But also, I think what is most paramount about the qualities of the soul, and that comes through, and that's the quality of love, the degree through which one can express love in their world, in the outer world, and the selflessness of love, or the unconditional kind of love. This is pure soul love. It's a pure soul quality, and when you see that in people, you know right away that there is something special there, and that's really that's coming from within.
And you're not just speaking about personal love, the love that we have for our family and friends and our spouse and so on, but the impersonal love, too, that you see sometimes between complete strangers that radiates from people simply because of this presence of the soul that sees a connection with others. I think a sign of the soul is the ability to look at another person, perhaps one who is suffering or in some dire straits, and say, there, but for the grace of God, go I. To be able to look at one's fellow passengers on the subway and imagine the humanity and the struggle that each of them is going through, and to know that we're not all that different from each other.
Right, and particularly if it's a spontaneous response, if that response of yours is spontaneous, then it comes without any qualifications, without any impediments in the way of that energy, and it just pours out automatically, and that's true soul love.
I think another sign of the soul, an indication of its presence, is the commitment to truth at any cost, even the cost to the personal self. And by that I mean that kind of inner dialogue that goes on within our minds that I mentioned a while ago. Every time you find yourself trying to rationalize something that happened, something that you said or did, and you carry on this rationalization within your mind in an attempt to justify it, I think that's the voice of the soul trying to be heard over the din of the personality trying to make a good case for itself. And the commitment to truth will bring the awareness into the consciousness of wrongdoing if one is really going to live a life that's based on honesty and self-assessment.
And for those people who just tuned in, you're listening to Inner Sight. And our discussion today is the soul. This is the soul part one. And by the way, we're giving a gift away today. We'd love to give you a gift called The Science of Meditation. It's a booklet, and so many people are getting involved in meditation. There's so many wonderful reports about the benefits of meditation, and I don't think it's hard to get into that state of consciousness, but certainly there are certain approaches to meditation that are important to take if one is to enjoy meditation, and there's been so many reports about health benefits derived from meditation, people who have been nervous and upset who report that having gotten involved in meditation and doing meditation that they finally have achieved some sense of tranquility within. So you're certainly welcome to call us up and order our book that we're happy to give to you as a gift called The Science of Meditation. So for that book, please give us a call at 1-866-695-8247. That's 1-866-695-8247 or 1-866-NY-LUCIS. Think of New York LUCIS. And also we have 24 volumes of books, and of course, many people, they buy one at a time, and you're certainly welcome to, but if you'd like to, you can order our books and order all 24 volumes, and then you get a 10% discount. And for those books, you can order them through Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com, or you can order them from Borders, or once again, you can order them directly from us, if you order them directly from us, the advantage to ordering them from us is you do get a 10% discount if you order all 24 volumes. What we're talking about today, all of the discussion today, emanates from the works of Alice Bailey, and you can certainly find a lot of what we're saying in that. In fact, most of what we say on this show relates to the works of Alice Bailey, and it's not easy reading. It's philosophy. It's examining one's life, but it's certainly very worthwhile. If you just enjoy listening to TV and reading escape novels, well, so be it. But if you're in a state of mind where you're interested in the meaning of life, the purpose of our being, what we're here for, where we're going, examining the past, thinking about life in a very meaningful way, then the works of Alice Bailey are for you, perhaps. And one of the questions we frequently are asked is, are you a religion? No, we're not a religion. We're a philosophy, a way of leading life, a way of approaching life in a way that we think is an intelligent approach to life. So if you'd like to order our books, please do so. And if you want our free book that we're giving you today called The Science of Meditation, once again, to purchase books or to purchase a copy, cassette copy of this show or any of our other shows, give us a call at 1-866-695-8247. That's 1-866-695-8247, or an easy way of remembering it, 1-866-NY-LUCIS, L-U-C-I-S. Think of New York LUCIS. And Sarah, Dale, I was very intrigued about the second question because of in all my upbringing, I've always been hearing about the soul, and I just more or less to sum up what we're saying, I enjoyed that last question. In summary, how do we recognize the soul? Do you have any more comments on that?
Well, yes, there are many more ways to recognize it because the soul is the quality aspect of the human being. We know the soul, we recognize it by its qualities. For example, love is a quality of the soul, impersonal love, service is an attribute of the soul. The desire to serve is a sign that the soul is present and on duty, so to speak. The person who has an inclusive, open, tolerant consciousness towards other human beings who are different from himself is one who is thinking as the soul. One who is joyful no matter what's going on in the outer life, if there is that inner quality of joy, that's a sign of the soul. The desire to share to share money, to share time, to share whatever one has with others. Mm. That's an indication of the soul.
Yeah, we have to remember that the soul is what gives us consciousness in the first place. I mean, we wouldn't be conscious in this world, I don't think, without this thing called the soul, this factor of the soul. It's a capacity that we have that enables us to become aware of our world around us, aware of the people, aware of ourselves, aware of our divine source. And that's very important, I think, to kind of bear that mind.
Interestingly, sometimes people come into deeper contact with their soul when they are going through a very bad patch. Mm-hmm. For some reason, the friction that's created between the personality, which always likes to be content and happy, and the soul, the imprisoned splendor that Browning spoke of that dwells within us, the friction between those two somehow creates an opening for the soul. So people often feel that if something goes wrong in their life, if they enter into a crisis of some sort, that they've made a mistake, that things have gone bad and gone off track. And in fact, that very crisis might be a moment of real productivity from the viewpoint of the soul, because throwing one off of one's standard view of life, kind of destabilizing and shaking up one's perception of life and of oneself, can be an inlet for the soul to impress its larger, wider vision on the consciousness.
Yeah, it goes right back to the quote that we mentioned at the beginning. The soul is a force of evolution, and the soul is always acting on this personality nature to move it forward. Come on, get off the dime and do something constructive.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we sometimes we sense this striving for perfection, and we look at our lives and say, "My God, I'm not
perfect.
I'm not measuring up here." And so you get very depressed, and you go through a state of depression. And it's because that little voice within you is telling you to move on. Maybe there is an opportunity here to look at yourself carefully and take real stock of yourself and say, "What more can I do?" And then maybe the light begins to pour in when you let it.
You can also take whatever circumstance you're in, even a bad one, even a crisis, even a problem in your marriage or in your work life or a problem with your children, and say, "What can this experience teach me? What can I learn from this? Mm-hmm. I'm in this situation. How can I mine it for the little pebble of gold that must lie within it?" And that can open you up to the soul, because there's no circumstance in life that can't lead to an opening for the soul, which is wisdom, light, reason, strength, endurance. Those are the qualities of the soul, and sometimes a crisis can be an opening for that wisdom and light and strength to pour in.
Now, let me see if I understand this now. So you're saying that the depression and some of the suffering that we go through in life could very well be a wake-up call from the soul speaking to us in a particular way to change the status quo.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
Yes. The personality is committed to inertia. Mm-hmm. The outer form loves the inert status quo, and the soul needs destabilization sometimes in one's consciousness, in one's perception, so that one can look at life in a new way, through a new lens, so to speak. Crisis presents the opportunity.
Yeah, I see. How does one deepen his contact with the soul? I think the soul can be very valuable for us to understand and acknowledge and to communicate with, but how can we deepen our contact with the soul?
Well, there are any number of methods. One is through service. In serving others, we learn to love more. And by service, I don't just mean cooperating with the Red Cross or whatever, but whatever circumstance you're in, turning it into a field of service And that means whether one's in the business world or a school teacher or a housewife or a mother or an office worker, whatever you're in, you can turn that environment into your place of service, which is the opportunity to build better relationships with others, to foster cooperation with others. That is an opportunity for deepening the contact with the soul. Another is through meditation or prayer.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I was just going to say, mention meditation, because that's very paramount in our work at the Lucis Trust and in the Arcane School. We emphasize meditation, and meditation is one of the pillars of the school, the service, meditation, and study. And that's why we recommend this little booklet that we give out, The Science of Meditation, because it's kind of an introduction. And we also have a tape called Beginning to Meditate that people might like to have.
Can they have that for free also?
They may have that
it's
for
free.
Free.
All right. I get the credit for that because I brought that out of you.
And we'll also send along the Science of Meditation booklet along with that tape. And it kind of talks about what we've been talking about today, about how to deepen in that contact with the soul.
Yeah. I mentioned earlier that the soul is that inner voice that's often not heard. There's a term for this in the ageless wisdom. It's called the voice of the silence. And as I said, so often the outer active busy life overwhelms the soul by the din of the very activity and busyness of the outer life. But the voice of the silence can be heard if you create a place of stillness within your life on a regular basis. That's what the value of meditation is. No matter how busy your life is, if you set aside some time each day to be quiet and to look within and to start trying to hear that inner knower that is present within all of us, that guide is available and willing to give its direction and its wisdom if we are quiet enough to hear it. And meditation creates the condition to hear that voice.
Yes, and meditation also provides that opening for goodwill, the goodwill of the soul to come right through. And that is the real moving force in one's life in all relationships.
So. Speaking of goodwill, also, is I think that both of you are doing goodwill today by giving away for free the Science of Meditation and the cassette tape on meditation. So if anybody wants those, as well as purchasing our books, you can certainly call us at 1-866-695-8247. An easy way is 1-866-NY-LUCIS. And in closing, we invite you to ponder on this thought. Goodwill is the touchstone that will transform the world. Goodwill is love in action. It's the energy that draws us together in right relationship. There's a world prayer called the Great Invocation. It's a call for light and love and goodwill to flow into the world and into our hearts. Let's listen for a moment to these powerful words.
From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into human minds. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into human hearts. May the coming one return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide all little human wills, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the human race, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth.